Hey, Pocket Change listeners, welcome back. Today is a really special episode. It's with my daughter, and I put that in air quotes, Elise Lakeman. Elise is known for her photography and her really great attitude and resiliency. She's been through a lot in her life and has experienced alcoholism, the loss of a parent, and has managed grief. Not only that, but she quit her 9-to-5 and started living her dream. Stay tuned. We're coming at you. And welcome back, Pocket Change listeners. Today, I'm so excited to invite my daughter, in air quotes, and an amazing photographer and a really wonderful, resilient business owner, Elise Lakeman. Welcome, Elise.
Welcome, other mother. So exciting.
It is wonderful, and it is so great to have you. I mean, I think, Elise, when I think of you, I think of resilience. You have come up through, you're kind of like a crocus. You come up through the shit, and you just shine, and I think it's absolutely amazing. I mean, you know, you've been through a lot in a very short period of time on this earth, and you've kind of just grown through it and really matured and become this wonderful business owner and sister and daughter and auntie. And let's talk about it. Let's talk about you.
Oh, I love, thank you. Well, first I will just address that you and your beautiful family are a huge part in everything you just said. Literally from the age, when did I meet? When I was 14 years old. And that's when I say I was in the worst of things. And it's like I believe so much in the universe that you were put in my life. I was meant to meet you, and just the way things like carried with you and I feel is just like you were placed where, you were definitely a saving grace, and even to this day, in big and small, and that's just what moms do. So, and you prove that time and time again.
It's what we do. It's what we do. And so, you know, thank you for that. It is, you know, I think that everything happens for a reason, and we're put into one another's paths for a reason. And, you know, you were actually 12 or 13 when we met. You were little.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I think I was, definitely in a little mind molding phase for sure.
Yeah. So, listen, let's dive in a little bit and talk a little bit about who you are and where you've come from. I mean, you think about your early childhood, you think about some of the things that you've been through. I mean, the loss of your mother and providing her with that hospice and support and being there as a very young woman. I mean, those are some really raw, real deal things. And then I'd love to talk about your transition away from working for the government to then working for yourself.
Yeah, it still feels like out of body that I've even done these things, I think. So yeah, I guess just, backstories. Yeah, my mom was diagnosed with cancer in 2014. It was very much an older generation way of things of like, you know, too scared to upset your family, don't want to upset your family, so we don't check on our health, and everything is going to be fine, it's fine, don't want to worry our kids. But then it got to a point, obviously, where the cancer ended up taking over, and it was just too late. And that was just very hard because upbringing, you know, my dad was the thing that I love now, let's just start here, is that I've gone through multiple years of therapy, so I've done a lot of inner child work as well. So now, talk to me 2 years ago, I'm like, screw dad, screw him, you know, all that. And in some ways, I still have those angry pieces, but I forgive. My dad is a man who grew up with parents they abandoned him. They treated him like he was a piece of trash. You know, you're not born bad. You're not born a bad person. And when your own parents treat you poorly, that instantly puts into your mind, I'm unwanted abandonment, right? Anyways, long story short, my dad just wasn't taught to be a good dad. He didn't know how to be a good dad. He had his grandfather, but his grandfather passed away. So just as a man of a lot of hurt and a lot of loss, and he's just not emotionally regulated. He's not emotionally mature. he is a great person, and I think I've forgiven him for what he didn't know, but I also still validate myself in what he did to hurt me through his alcohol journey, and that was his coping mechanism, was if you drink it away, you don't feel it. In reality, it's, yeah, while you're numbing yourself, you're pushing literally everyone who loves you away, and during those times, yeah, whereas crucial, like where you and Aaron and Ruth were in my life of, you know, you guys were an escape for me, you guys were a safe place for me. I think when they say village, it truly, you know, when you're growing up, you're still like a kid with, you don't know what you're doing, you don't know where you're going, you don't, you know, and especially with, my mom, my parents were separated, and my mom lived in Airdrie with her boyfriend, who is a saint. My stepdad is amazing, so close to him to this day. So, you know, and it's funny, a lot of people always say, well, where's your mom? Where's your mom? Why don't you live with your mom? Why isn't your mom here? And stuff like that. And my mom was very much there. It was me who made the choice to stay and live with my dad during all of this, because I'd loved the people I had met in Strathmore. I loved the family I have gained within you guys, within other people's parents, and a lot of my friends. My brother and sister, my sister's 10 years older, my brother is 5 years older, and they just got out as soon as they could, and that was them. But I guess what was a negative part of that is that was me as a little girl, say, like my inner child being like, no, I can help my dad. I can help my dad. I'm going to help my dad. He'll stop drinking. I know he will. I will do everything for that, which carried into adult life, which in that way of thinking, you know, like basically like wanting to see everyone's potential and stuff and not realizing like and seeing what things are at face value.
And choice.
And choice. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I know my mom was just like my soundboard, my recharge station, my home base, my best friend. And it's just too bad that she passed away when I was 21. And I think that's a transition phase of like mother, daughter, but also gaining like a friendship as an adult. So that's where it's really tough now as a 29-year-old. It's really hard because I would love to call my mom and just chat about, you know, anything, you know, not just necessarily needing like that motherly advice or just, you know, just having her as a best friend. So sorry if my story kind of went off there a little bit, but yeah.
I think that, you know, when we think about those bonds with our parents, right? I mean, and I think this is maybe where you and I have so much similarities, only it's the other way around, right? Where it was my mother who was the alcoholic and it was my father who was the saint, right? And I think, you know, those relationships are just so powerful in teaching us what we're actually capable of, right? I mean, despite the fact that you didn't really have hot home-cooked meals as a 14, 15-year-old, you didn't have somebody driving you around to, you know, practices and games and things like that. Like, you really, essentially, through the key part of your adolescence, pretty much raised yourself. You know, you would go to the bar to try and pick your dad up and get him home to cook you supper. Right. And, right. You know, it's just I think about those things, and I think it's one of the things that I find the most endearing about you is there's no woe is me in you ever. Like, even at the pinnacle of pain and grief and loss, it still wasn't woe is me. It is, I miss this woman. She gave me life. She was my safe harbor. But at the same time, you just didn't quit. Like, so talk a little bit about where the desire and the drive to be as resilient as you are, where does that come from?
I would say it just comes from my mom, honestly. Like, she just always like just showed us to, you know, you can do it. She always said, you can do anything you put your mind to. Her and my grandma both, they just would always say that. I remember, you know, they would both just celebrate any win I had, as a mom and grandma does. But just funny, like, I would bring my report card to my grandma, and she, I don't know if she like fully understood like junior high and high school like grades, but she'd be like, oh my god, good job, and, like, celebrating. I'm like, grandma, that wasn't great. that was a bad grade, like, whatever. But, you know, they just like taught me to celebrate the small things, even if they aren't that, you know, just celebrate your wins. And they just, yeah, showed me, well, and my mom just showed me to like keep going. Like, she was a single mom of three kids at one time, and she just, my mom never did the woe is me either. She never, which the negative side is that she's very stressed, and she like didn't treat herself right, and she didn't take care of herself. And she worked her, can I say ass? She worked her ass off, and for us kids. And she was driving, like when we would go there on the weekends, she was driving us to appointments. She was driving us here, there, and everywhere. She would drive, yeah, to Carsland to pick us up. You know, she'd go to work, she'd take care of my grandpa. Like, she just showed us that you take care of those who you love, and you take, what I learned from her, though, is to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but she just showed us to just, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And then now with my learning, I add in, you got to do what you got to do, and you have to value yourself in the process. So boundaries and stuff like that. But she just showed us that, like, that unconditional love, and just, yeah, just, you find, my mom really taught us to find the beauty in everything. I personally can say that for myself. Like, yeah, I guess I can't speak for my siblings and stuff, but I definitely took away from my mom to just, you know, my mom would like look at this pen and be like, oh my gosh, look at this purple pen. It is so beautiful. The most beautiful purple I've ever seen. You know, she just would make the best and just showed us, yeah, like, you know, life is tough, but you make the best of it.
Yeah. And you have a really, really solid relationship with your nephew as a result. Like, just your family's a bit scattered, but you and your nephew have a really, really strong bond. And that was forged through the relationship that you had with your mom.
Yes, absolutely. My nephew, I always say, I feel like he was like my kid in a past life. He, I just like, I'm so grateful for my sister giving me my little best friend, I always say. He's now 19, we're 10 years apart. But I love him. I'm just so proud of him. I'm like, I don't know what it's like to love your own child, but like the love I have for my nephew is just, I can't even express it. Yeah, I'm just so grateful. Him and I'm grateful for like our closeness in age too, because like I'm still the cool auntie, and then I'm still like, okay, I tell you, you know, what to do and stuff like that. But yeah, I am very grateful. All my nephew and my mom were attached at the hip. So, and then I would always love to be with my mom on weekends and stuff like that. So Austin always wanted to be with grandma, and I always wanted to be with my mom. So we were always just all together, which was really, really nice.
How do you support someone, because he was very young, like he was still fairly little when your mom passed away? And, you know, I remember a story of you telling me how he was grieving and he just wanted to be with grandma. How do you, as someone going through grief, who has that deep, deep relationship with this child, you've lost your mother, he's lost his grandmother, you guys have this incredible bond. How did you support him, and how did he support you through that period of time?
I think what we did a lot was my mom, because she was always driving us around. Like, a lot of our memories are us in the car, because we were always just going somewhere doing something. My mom, when she would hear a funny song, she would do a dorky little snap of her fingers, and she'd like bob her head a little bit. So every time me and Austin would hear, you know, a song with a good beat, him and I would go, oh, time to do the grandma. And we'd do the snap and stuff like that. Or we'd joke about, just like things that she would say, or like Austin would say, like, oh, grandma would be laughing at this right now. So I think like us keeping her memory alive, because it is tough. Like, I didn't know myself how to support Austin at the time. I was 21, he was 11. And yeah, I didn't know entirely. Like, my sister had put him into grief support, so he did go to that. But I think I was in my own grief, so I didn't really know exactly what went on there. But I think just talking about her and keeping and letting him know, as a boy, as a man, it's okay to cry. It's okay to let it out. Please don't keep things in. If you need to call and cry or whatever, just do it. don't suppress it, because grandma was a huge part of our lives. And I think like his stories with her too, just like helped me as well. Like, I think the common denominator is we just had so much love for her and we both just miss her. So I think we just like to keep her alive and in talking and joking and, you know, just never having her as like the bring something up like to do with my mom and then it's like, you know, silence and stuff. We just like, we enjoy talking about it. So I think it helps both of us, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there's a song, and the song, there's this line in a song and it says, they say you die twice. The first time is the time that they put you into the ground. And the second time is the last time somebody utters your name. And so I think we have an obligation. I think there's an obligation for us to keep those memories alive, to sustain and support and give ourselves peace and comfort. But I think that, you know, the other thing that I found through your process, your grief process, which actually lent to my grief process when I lost my dad, was just the desire to get through it, to acknowledge it. Like, I think, you know, the day that my dad passed away, you texted me and you said, if you need anything, let me know. And that's a beautiful sentiment coming from a child. But secondarily, I said to you, how do I get through it faster? How can I hack my way through this? I love psychology and I'm going to do it. You're shaking your head at me and you're smiling. And I remember you said to me, you're very smart, but you can't skip any step. And you just reminded me, I'm going to have to feel it in order to experience it and that I'm not going to be able to push through. I will never forget that conversation.
Oh, well, I'm glad. It's true though. Like, I just actually talked to someone today who lost their mom. He was a groom of one of my clients, and his mom had MS, and it was beautiful at the wedding. Mm-hmm. He was able to dance with her, and he did have to like hold her up, and she's in a wheelchair and stuff, but it was just beautiful. And so I just told him today, I said, I'm not one to sugarcoat. I'm not going to say, you know, time does heal. It does, but it's like my mom's birthday is in 4 days, and this month has been shit for me. I've mm-hmm. been sad. And it's been 7 years, you know, I said, just feel what you need in the moment. If you just need to cry, please cry. That's your body saying, I'm just feeling. And when you're crying, that's just, you just, like I said before, you have so much love in your side of your body and it just has nowhere to go. And it hurts, you know, it hurts. And you just have to just truly feel it. Cause my stepdad, oh my gosh, my stepdad goes, first, I'd say almost first year, he goes, nope, we just got to push through it. It's going to be okay. Like, time will heal. We just got to push, push, push. And in my head, I said, you are going to break down. And then finally he calls me and he tells me he's depressed. And he tells me very sad things that he was thinking in his mind. And even now to this day, he cries on demand when I talk about my mom. On demand, he'll cry. I think it's because he suppressed it so much. And so I guess, yeah, my biggest thing is that you have to feel it to heal it. And grief is something you will not heal. That is just point blank. Can't heal grief. It's going to be there, you know, like there's still times, like I'm turning 30 in April and it pains me to know that I will never know my mom in my 30s ever. You know, I have a new boyfriend. It pains me that Ivan will never know my mom and my family dinners and seeing that side of my family, you know, and it pains me that one day I will be 51, the same age as my mother, and I will be growing older than she got to, you know, so it's not just, you know, oh, she passed away. It's been this, that, like when I have engaged, when I have a baby, when I, you know, there's so many things in life, or just sometimes when you see something outside and you just say, oh my God, I'd love to tell my mom about this. Or, mm-hmm. you know, mom, I put away my laundry, you know, just anything. So grief is just with you all the time. It's just, if you ignore it, I always say the more you persist or the more you resist, the more it persists. So it's just, yeah, you really, really gotta feel it. It's the biggest thing.
I agree. And, you know, a friend of mine after my dad passed did say that something very similar is that grief and loss is really just an abundance of love that has no place to go. And So I think, you know, our responsibility as the legacy of our parents, like what I do and how I choose to deal with my grief is I still talk to my dad. I write on his Facebook wall all the time. But I also go out and I channel that love that I have for him into other people, because that is who he was as a person, right? Like the gift of love for some people, they don't get it, right? Like I work with people who don't have people who listen or care. And that was such a huge piece of who he was as a person and how he impressed on my life. And, you know, one of the things that we do, and it was interesting because Ruth noticed, was for special occasions, we always get Black Forest cake. It was his favorite. And this year for my birthday, we didn't do Black Forest cake.
That was my mom's favorite cake. That's really funny.
That is funny. You know, and so, you know, what we do is we go and we do the things that we knew he loved, and we enjoy the things that we knew he loved, and we talk about him, and, you know, we storytell, and we look at pictures, and we reminisce, and we cry. And, you know, I think grief can be a really, really productive part of who we are. You know, I look at Erin's family, and her grandmother passed away 20 years ago. There is not one single family gathering that ever goes on where somebody doesn't mention Baba's name, right? So, you know, I think, and the other thing too, Elise, is that, you know, we think about the things that you went through, and you were working this kind of corporate government job that didn't fill your soul up, that kind of actually sucked your soul out while you were going through that. And you managed to put yourself in a position to be able to leave that job and live your dream. So let's switch gears and talk a little bit about what that is like to be able to see your goal on the horizon and say, hey, I can be self-sustaining at something that was actually a hobby.
Yeah, so that had my mom's voice in the back of my head in two sides of, because she'd always say, it's hard. I don't want to say like, oh, the older generation, whatever, but it's just, we're so like have it in our brains embedded, like, oh, you need a job with a pension. You need a, you know, government job, union, all this stuff. Great, great, great. Check, check, check. But I don't know. I worked for the government at the courthouse in Calgary Provincial Traffic Court. And I was just a little 19-year-old starting, and I'm like, this is so cool. I went from the job, Kate, that you got me hooked to. So everything I was thinking about this morning when I was making my coffee, I said, Kate, really career-wise, like things, you wanted me to get out of Strathmore. You wanted me to expand my horizons, which I'm forever grateful for. And I worked, Jenny Craig as a client consultant, coordinator, something like that. It was great. People were great. It wasn't for me, but it was just amazing foot in the door. And then I started working for Calgary Traffic Court, and that was very, very cool. It was very cool to see how things work, and worked there for 9 years, and everyone there became my family. And I'm grateful for all of them to this day. The only thing is, it's just the morale was not good. It was not good. Mm-hmm. It was very draining. It was very soul sucking. It was very monotonous. It was very, I just knew in my heart and my soul, like I needed to do more. I started photography in 2014, I think 2014, beginning of 2015. And, things didn't really start picking up, I'd say, until like end of 2019. And I just found myself, I have the balance of this, you know, government job. You know, I think of it, when I think of that, I think of gray. I think of gray and like dingy and colorless. And I know myself, I'm an extrovert. I'm a people person. I love to enjoy things. And photography, it brings colors. It brings brightness. It brings happiness. It brings joy. And, you know, I have my mother to think of what I view as a photo. It's not just a photo. It's a time warp back into that moment, you know? So all I have left of my mom is images and photos and stuff. And I will cherish that forever. So knowing that I can do that for families and people and whoever is just such a, you know, blessing. And that's my drive behind it. But yeah, like I just found myself getting so busy with photography. I was editing on my morning breaks, my lunch hour, my afternoon breaks when I got home, and then I'd go do photo shoots. So I felt like I was my mom too. Like it all refers back to it. It's just my mom would, you know, get up, she'd go see my grandpa at his home, then she'd drive to her work 2 to 10, drive back to Airdrie, do it all over again. Zero time for herself, zero, you know, just mm-hmm. anything. And then for myself, I just was like, I am so drained. I'm so drained. What I am grateful for is I didn't really spend the money I was making on photography. I didn't realize how much that, you know, I looked over at my bank account and I said, I can really do this. I can really leave and I can exceed what I'm making here in something that fulfills me and makes me happy and makes me feel good. Whereas, you know, I entered people's speeding tickets for God's sake. So, I mean, every time I'd see like an ex-boyfriend's name, I'm like, hey, that was a little enjoyment, but that was a little enjoyment. That's about it, you know, and lunch breaks with my girlfriends at the courthouse, but that's not the job. You know, I'm not excited. Can't go to work excited for a lunch break, you know? But it was such a battle there, such great people, but just, it just puts this like persona on people, negativity. And it's really tough. Like they're all amazing people. It's just such a weird thing. It's like, as soon as you walk in those doors, it was like, boo. But no, anyway, so just, yeah. And one day I remember I just looked at my coworker, one of my good best friends from the courthouse, Whitney. And I said, I was like, I think I need to quit here. And that was like out of body because I'm such a creature of habit. Like, oh, you just do, you know, you stay where you're at. This is comfortable, you know. But I feel the universe. I'm such a believer in the universe. The universe had plans for me. The universe was telling me I needed to do that. It showed me in many, many ways. I had, you know, my 8-year relationship ended. My nephew moved to his dad's. And what else happened? And I saw my dad and it just triggered my inner child to the nines. So I was like, what is happening here? Something, this big transition is happening. And so I'm going through all that and I picked a day, I said, September 2nd, I'm going to quit. Which was very, very cool moment. It was scary. It was very cool. But and then, yeah, I quit. And then, yeah, I literally was knocked straight on my ass. I quit government job. My nephew moved away. You know, my 8-year relationship is over, just this, that, and the other thing. And it just pushed me into this beautiful path that I'm like so forever grateful for. Like, as sad as I am, my relationship ended. The most beautiful gift he could have ever given me was letting me go. And, you know, seeing my dad, it obviously showed me I needed to work. Like, that inner child, she needed some love and she needed attention. She was crying. And and then just missing my nephew, and you know, just, but our relationship is still great. We talk every day, stuff like that. But yeah, just, it was just crazy how it all happened. I couldn't believe it. It's like everything that was comfortable just was woof, like taken right away from me. And I had to start from scratch, but I had photography and I had that drive. Even when I was at my lowest and down, I had that voice of my mom saying, you can do anything you put your mind to. And I had the amazing support from everybody. And I just had that drive. There's that drive in me that was like, you got this and you can do this no matter what. It's shit right now, but you can do this.
Well, and I think there's power in that space, right? The space to feel challenged, the space to feel scared. Like, we do really great things when our back is against the wall. And here, your back is against the wall, but it was a lot by choice, right? I mean, you know, a lot of it. And let's be honest, some of it was really messy, right? Seeing,
very.
You know, and seeing that relationship that you were in, and I mean, there was more to it than just, you know, a guy you dated. It was somebody who you'd experienced the loss of your mother with, right? Like, that, you don't, there's a value on that relationship that can't exist anymore because it just isn't right, you know. And I will never forget on September 2nd, your last day of work, when I walked in celebrating someone's birthday and you're saying goodbye to your colleagues and having this wonderful time. And I look over and there you are, and you're with this beautiful man who kind of looks like in Jason Momoa and this group of, you know, courthouse people. And it was just like, it was the most amazing thing, because it's like the one thing that, you know, as a parent, you want to see with your children, and you're one of my adopted, right? I mean, is that you want to see them successful. You want to see them happy. You want to see them excited to wake up in the morning, not living in this gray shit of a job. Like, I remember my dad used to say to me, hey, you would make a really great corrections officer. Yeah, I probably would. But I did 25 years while you were working in the jail, and I'm not interested in that. That's not my path, right? And I just think that there's so much that you can lend others. I mean, like you said, even in your photography business, you're giving people these priceless memories. You're giving them weddings, engagements, children at their first steps, family photos, these experiences that people will get to remember. And that is so powerful. You know, you said something that really stuck with me, and that is you can't go to work excited by just having a lunch break. Right? Like, you have to live your purpose. What's your purpose? Your purpose is to bring beauty into other people's lives, to save memories for people. That is so powerful and just so empowering.
Yeah, it's you. Yeah, like, I honestly, like, can't, I think I tell you a lot, but I'll tell you a million times till I'm blue in the face. Like, your way of living and your purpose and your, you know, how important your time is, and how you taught me, you really taught me how valuable your time is. And I heard a quote that, you know, time, or we're the pilot of our time, you know what I mean? And we decide how we spend that time, and just like who we spend it with. And you're a very purposeful person. You spend time with people who bring value to you. And when you find the people that do not, unfortunately, you don't get to have my time. And that is some, it's funny when you're, I think, yeah, like I always say, two years ago, me, that was like intimidating. That was like, oh, ugh, you know, but now that you really, now that, like, I personally have grown into this person that I am, I see that now, and I'm like, holy crap, like, your time, and especially with losing somebody so important, is you don't ever get to go back. Like, I always say to my boyfriend, like, I will never get a Friday, November 10th, 2023 ever again. And you really, and some could say that's very, what's the word? My therapist told me that I'm very hyper vigilant like that. Like, I think above of stuff like that. That's, some people are like, okay, wackadoo, but I'm like, it's true. How do you, like, how are we spending this time, and who do we want in our spot, our space? And I have this note at my desk that I can't find right now, but it says, it's something to do with who you invite to your table. Not everybody gets an invite to your table. And you get to choose who is at your table and stuff like that. So that's just so important and valuable, because we can't, you know, it's just such a different perspective in life when you view things that way.
It is. And I think that, you know, it is. Time is the one thing you can't get back, ever. It is a non-renewable resource. And, you know, I think about that, like, so one of the things I did, I don't know if I've told you this, but, like, on my phone, I have my compartments for my apps, and I've renamed them. So, like, my social media app used to be called Socials, and now it's called I Am Loved. And my finance container is called I Am Abundant. My travel is I Am On The Rise. Right? It's so cool, right? So I put positive affirmations on something that I use every day, and I hit those containers constantly. But one of the things that I did was, I have one called entertainment, and it's just like, you know, your little stupid games and whatever. But what I named that one is I Am Allowed to Rest. Because as someone who values time the way that I do, and even more so after losing my father, the interactions that I choose and the people that I choose to sit at my table, you're 100% right. you look around the table at my birthday party a couple weeks ago, there was a lot of very different people from very different spectrums of life. But the one thing that every person in that room has in common is a value system. And they're all good people. They're hardworking people. They're kind people. Kind people are my kind of people. And people who value... Absolutely. And people who value time and people who value productivity and people who value self-improvement and the desire to always grow and change. I don't ever want to be the same person 2 days in a row. Life is so beautiful and we get one shot that we know of. And why wouldn't you want to just say yes to the things that set your soul on fire? And I think, you know, Elise, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast was because you've done that. You don't shy away from opportunity or challenge. I mean, listen, when we got you the job at Jenny Craig, you were serving tables and hating life. And that job wasn't great, but you know what it did? It gave you office management skills and it promoted you into the space and the time to be able to have a career that facilitated your passion. Amazing.
Totally. Yeah, it absolutely did. And it's like, I have takeaways from so many people, like, you know, and my one boss there at Jenny Craig, her name is Emily. And at the time, I didn't know I had ADHD. So this is another thing. I'm so grateful I figured that out in my adult years. But she said, at least you need to pay attention to detail. And I like think of that all the time. But I'm like, I really try. Like, I honestly try, you know. But just anyways, I go off in my own little bubble there, but ADHD, am I right? But so she taught me like, you know, does anybody like takeaways? Like I learned from the station, you know, dealing with serving tables and learning about other people and different personalities and ways to find that common denominator and just, yeah, it teaches you patience and kindness. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the courthouse teaches you. It's either you, for myself, I'm not going to speak on anyone else, but it's really teaches you and makes you ask yourself of how do I want my life to look? Do I want to live in this monotonous, you know, pale beige walls every day and, you know, entering tickets and stuff like that, or like not expanding, because you can only go so far there. But if that's your passion, you go, Glen Coco, you go, like you do your thing. But if there's a feeling of more, is the biggest line I will tell you that I got was, oh my God, I'm so jealous. I wish I could do that. Oh, wow. I wish. And I said, you can. What makes me different than you? What makes me different? Oh, you're young, but it doesn't matter. There's people who restart, just like when someone says, oh, I don't know if I can try that that degree because I can't do that school, a college degree or anything like that. But it's like, because it takes 5 years, but it's like, you're still going to live for 5 years. So why not do something you love and mm-hmm. something that challenges you and that would make you feel really good? It's like you're saying, it's being comfortable, and that's what I've been my whole life. Well, like when you grow up in a chaotic family, you try to keep yourself safe. So you're always trying to control things to keep yourself safe because that's what you learn as a child. And so when it's uncomfortable, it's like, stay away. Mm-hmm. What's going to come? But the most beautiful things for me have come being uncomfortable.
Absolutely. You know, I think you're right. And we find beauty in discomfort, right? Like that's where progress happens. If you look at anything you've ever done, that was the hardest thing in your life, finishing high school, going back and, you know, getting that one credit that you didn't get that you got shit canned for, then, you know, you think about trying to, you put braces on your teeth. Right. I mean, that was not easy. It was not an expensive endeavor, but it was something that you wanted to do. I mean, you do these things and I don't think that we realize how much hard we do in a day. Right. And I think that people have self-limiting beliefs. Right. We did Empower event with Nikki. And how easy is it for you to say, I can't do this or whatever, when it's really actually I won't do this? Because there's a very big difference between I can't and I won't. And it's OK to not want to do things. But I think the value lies in the mindset of knowing that should you choose not to do something, there is a consequence, whether it's positive or negative. You know, I just had this conversation with a client this morning is, you know, you can go forward and you can have a conversation and it can feel scary and you can be worried about anxiety, Or you can go forward and be uncomfortable and anxiety and push through and realize, hey, I'm not going to die by doing this, right? So a choice is a really, really, really powerful thing in our lives. And I think you've done a lot in terms of choosing what suits you and what your value system is aligned to. So as we wind this down, if there was one or two little pieces of advice that you could leave with our listeners, what would that be?
I would say just embrace the discomfort. Embrace the opportunity, because you don't know. It's either it'll be great or it won't, you know. For anxious people, that's hard to dive into. But when in reality, anxiety is just the fear of not knowing. So when you're able to, man, therapy saved my life, honestly. I guess embrace the discomfort, and the options are limitless. The biggest thing that stops ourselves is ourselves. And the moment we believe in ourselves, even just a tiny little bit, just sit in that, just grab onto that and just let it go. Because life, I've seen life with negative gray glasses on from my teenage years to, you know, my deep grief years. And now I'd say this new part of my life too is just, it's bright, it's vibrant, it's scary, but it's beautiful. And I know that it's so rewarding. So just sit in that discomfort, allow it to be, and just grab on to that glimmer that you feel in your guts. We all have it. We all have the capacity to try and change and do new things. All of us, everyone.
That is amazing. Elise, I want to thank you so much for joining me today and for your vulnerability, for sharing and talking about the things that aren't things that we talk about usually, and empowering our listeners to think and maybe even behave differently. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I love you.
I love you too. It's, you know, you are... I don't have a lot of favorite people in this world, but you are one of my very favorite, very near people. And, you know, I've told you this dozens of times, but the day of your mother's funeral, I sat and I made a commitment to her that you were going to be okay and that you were going to be taken care of. And I will forever honor that.
And you really have. Oh, Kate. Oh, goodness. I love you so much.
I love you too. And I just want to note the producer, Ruth, your little sister, just threw a heart up on the screen. So she feels the same way. And, you know, listeners, I invite you to reach out of your comfort zone. I invite you to embrace somebody else and open your arms, give people a chance, and your life will always be full. And listeners, thank you for joining us for this really, really great episode of Pocket Change. As always, if there's any content you'd like to see us feature or anybody you'd like to see us host, reach out. A call doesn't cost a thing.